Do Iran's missile tests put the U.S. and Israel closer to military confrontation with Iran? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 10th. We'll talk with a guest about the response so far to Iran testing medium and long-range missiles, trying to show Iran's readiness to strike back if attacked by the U.S. or Israel. The response so far has been more diplomacy and sanctions, as suggested by Barack Obama.
Iran is a grave threat. We have to make sure that we are working with our allies to apply tightening pressure economically on Iran, at the same time as we start engaging in the kind of direct diplomacy that can lead them to standing down on issues like nuclear weapons.
And John McCain suggested more sanctions and a missile defense shield.
Channels of communication have been open, and they will remain open. But the time has now come for effective sanctions on Iran, which will then, I believe, can have a modifying effect on their very aggressive behavior, not only rhetorically, but in their pursuit of nuclear weapons, as well as this latest missile test.
We'll wonder what you think the U.S. response should be and how concerned you are over all of this as we talk with our guest, Robert Olson, who is a professor of Middle East history and politics at the University of Kentucky. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So all the tough talk yesterday after the first round of missile launch tests from Iran didn't stop them from launching even more tests overnight. It says they launched medium and long-range missiles into the Persian Gulf for a second day. What's Iran up to?
They have been testing their missiles and have missiles for more than a decade, and they've been testing them. I think that the latest missile tests have to do with the July 4th announcement by the Iranian foreign minister that Iran was willing to enter into negotiations with the 5+1, which means the European countries, which means the countries on the Security Council, the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China, plus Germany, to negotiate the modalities of how they would in what way Iran would deal with the enrichment of uranium. I think this is the big issue. I think that the missile thing is subordinate to this July 4th announcement.
So they want to launch some missiles because they want to negotiate?
They launched the missiles to counter, I think, all of the you might say the threats that they perceive coming from the United States, and this was exacerbated by just in the last week or so, the latest issue of the New Yorker by Seymour Hersh, who's published several articles on this topic. They're kind of broadsides, and of course Seymour Hersh's article dealt with the fact that the United States had committed several hundred millions of dollars, to destabilize Iran through instigating nationalist activity or sabotage and so forth, which the United States and some European countries, in particular Britain, have been engaged in for some time. But Seymour Hersh's article indicated, not that analysts in the field did not know before, quite an extensive operation against Iran. So I think Iran, this is part of the negotiating process to bring Europe into negotiations dealing with the nuclear enrichment issue. And I think that what Barack Obama just said and John McCain said, that indicates that they want these negotiations, although they're asking for more sanctions. It well could be that because of the sanctions that were imposed last December, that this may be one of the reasons why Iran has offered to negotiate the nuclear enrichment issue with those countries that I mentioned, and the United States is supposed to come in after 6 weeks or so.
Yeah. Well, What do you think of the calls for more sanctions? Both candidates saying that, though Barack Obama seems to be placing more of an emphasis on diplomacy. But well, what should the U.S. response be to this?
Well, I think the United States' response should be to encourage these negotiations between the 5+1. And then my understanding is that after these 6 weeks of negotiations, they probably, of course, would extend even longer than the United States is supposed to come in. Because Iran wants to negotiate with the Europeans. They have extensive relations with them, and they want to better their relations with the Europeans. Whatever happens with regard to the United States, and by improving their relations with Europe, accepting this negotiating thing that was offered by Javier Solana, who is the European Union's foreign policy advisor, they think that would strengthen their position, lessen the ability of the Europeans to go along with the Security Council sanctions as well, which is what McCain is calling for, and to a certain extent Obama as well. So this is part of this negotiating process. And of course, we have to understand that the process is not just the missiles, it's not just the uranium enrichment issue, but the whole the most crucial issue, of course, is with Iraq and the Persian Gulf, and Iran's stance in the Persian Gulf, because Iran is contesting the United States domination over the Middle East. After all, we occupy nearly every single country in the Persian Gulf in one way or another, and Iran would like to lessen that. They can't do away with it. The United States would like to do away with any kind of Iranian challenge whatsoever, especially in Iraq, but since they can't do it without some greater escalation, they also, of course, Europe would like to see them go along with these negotiations as well over the enrichment issue.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that as we go along. We're going to check weather now, and we welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Robert Olson, a professor of Middle East history and politics at the University of Kentucky, talking with us about Iran launching more missile tests, warning against U.S. and Israeli attacks or possible strikes. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
While deeply troubling, Iran's real nuclear progress has been less than the sum of its boasts. It has not yet perfected enrichment, and as a direct result of UN sanctions, Iran's ability to procure technology or items of significance for its nuclear and missile programs, even dual-use items, has been impaired.
That was the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, William Burns, talking before the U.S. House Foreign Affairs Committee yesterday, talking about Iran launching more missiles. Overnight, it fired medium and long-range missiles for a second day. They were launched throughout the night. An Iranian official says the tests are meant to show Iran's readiness to strike back if attacked by the U.S. or Israel. We're talking about what's going on and what the U.S. Response should be. Defense Secretary Robert Gates also said yesterday that these missile tests are just more evidence of the need for a U.S. missile defense system. What about that, Robert Olson? Does the U.S. need a missile defense system because of this?
Well, no, of course not. I think this is another lever which the United States wants to use against Iran, and to actually have them concede in negotiations, that is to have a precondition that they will agree not to proceed with the enrichment of uranium even before negotiations start. And this is what Iranian has balked at because of national pride, because of the differences within the Iranian administration, particularly with the weakening of Ahmadinejad and their willingness to enter negotiations with the European powers. Just 2 or 3 days ago, again, you had an announcement that Czechoslovakia, subsequently Poland, will agree to the placement of United States missiles in Czechoslovakia. And, of course, analysts and field think against whom? And one of the reasons is Iran. Iran in no way is going to threaten anybody in Eastern Europe, let alone Czechoslovakia. So it could be that the United States is also using this Iranian missile thing to encourage those Eastern European countries, Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, to accept the missile things as well. Mm-hmm. But it's complicated because Russia is extremely opposed to this, and they've made it clear that they will that they would retaliate. So the big question for the United States and Europe, especially Europe, would be not Iran, but rather Russia. So this, again, is part of this complex negotiations which are going on to have negotiations with Iran over its nuclear enrichment issue. Not necessarily producing an atomic nuclear weapon. Iran has said they're not going to do it. There's no evidence that Iran has done it. Even the National Intelligence estimate of last November indicated that they'd stopped in 2003. That is the weaponization of a nuclear weapon. Of course, Iran wants to have the ability, and they've proved that now, to be able to enrich uranium, for one thing, for the production of domestic electrical energy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of controversy in terms of Iran's oil resources. We know that they have the third largest gas resources in the world, but then of course that takes tremendous technology as well. And if the world has such a great need for gas, Iran's the third largest reserves in the world, then why would not Iran want to sell that and use use nuclear energy for its electrical production? So those are the issues which are at stake.
Yeah, we have a lot of callers who have questions or comments on this. Victor in Milwaukee is first. Hi, Victor.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning to your guests. To me, you have to ask yourself a question. How did we get here? And with me, you had to go all the way back to the 50s when we were high-handed and interfered and tinkered with the affairs of a sovereign nation when Mohammad Reza was in power. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. And we overthrew him, put the Shah in, because we wanted to make sure that our oil ally and their supplies wouldn't go to the Soviet Union and enter Khomeini. Now, I feel as though we should negotiate with them because Iran is a problem, is a mess that we started just like we did in Iraq. And that's the only way that's going to resolve the problem over there. The saber rattling will just exacerbate the issue. And North Korea was the same way. They fired missiles and tested missiles. That was their way of getting attention. Yeah. So I'd say I agree with Barack Obama. We should negotiate them. But at the same time, if they attack and try to close off the Persian Gulf, yes, military action should be used. But I believe we should engage them. Iran is a mess that we created. We should fix it.
Yeah. You do hear, though, John McCain saying, what do you want to negotiate about with a country whose president says Israel should be wiped off the face of the map?
Well, I think there are two things here to consider regarding what the caller said. One is that I think, again, this is part of the negotiations which I have been discussing, and you just recently have had agreement with North Korea after years of negotiations, and this shows probably in this last waning stage of the Bush-Cheney administration that they have assumed a more pragmatic attitude towards solving some of these issues. It's quite a reversal of the Bush policy the first 6.5 years, and so that augurs very well. And the second thing is that in this negotiation with North Korea and possibly with Iran, we have to understand that the Iranians in this instance are also positioning themselves, vis-a-vis what the caller said, for the next United States president. That is, Iran wants to have these negotiations with these European powers to indicate that they are willing to negotiate, and then it will make the whole nuclear and missile situation will become less problematic for the next president, whether it's Obama or whether it's McCain. It makes them easier to have these negotiations. And you can see this in the remarks that Obama and McCain made, even though there are differences mm-hmm. between them. Both of them seem to indicate that there would be negotiations, which is a bit of a change from what McCain was saying earlier, although Obama has stressed that he would want these negotiations, although he too claims that he's prepared to attack Iran. So all of these complex missile missile, nuclear enrichment, so forth, has to do with these negotiations, and it also has to do with Iraq very much because of, in fact, is one of the reasons why Iran is offering these negotiations to the European is because they think that they want to consolidate the gains that they have made in Iraq because of the miscalculations of American policy, and they don't want to risk these losses. They don't want to risk the losses that they've gained in Iran, Iraq, by increasing their status there, by increasing their status in the Persian Gulf. And when I say increasing it, it doesn't mean dominant, because there, of course, is a lot of opposition to Iran as well. But it enters into the political states of negotiations. Iran does not want to risk this unnecessarily. So these recent missile attacks, I think, are in response particularly to Israel's exercises throughout the Mediterranean this past week. Seymour Hersh's article that the United States is trying to destabilize Iran. And now the United States Congress just in the last week has issued money among certain congressmen for a blockade of Iran. And, mm-hmm. and this is part of the response. It's rather unfortunate because I think that there would have been a response to these European powers, and now with these missile things, it just increases the rhetoric, the war rhetoric, so to speak, in the United States about people who really would like to see United States or Iran attack Iraq.
So
so-called neoconservatives, if you will, who were responsible for the invasion of Iraq back in 2003.
You think it increases the rhetoric, but does it increase the likelihood of some sort of military confrontation?
No, it doesn't increase it any more than before, because you have all of these other complicated issues at stake. It does increase the rhetoric of those people in the media and those pundits and even some of those analysts and those think tanks, for example. You know, the Hudson Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, the Washington Institute for Near Eastern Affairs, and many others. A lot of the conservative right-wing think tanks who are very dominant on television, their spokesmen are very dominant in the national news, yes, that does increase it with them.
Well, yeah, you know who? I heard Tom DeLay, the former Republican majority leader, congressman, on a news show last night, saying that he thinks the U.S. should make the first strike before the end of the year while President Bush is still in office because Obama won't do it.
Well, of course, I mean, that, what you've just given is a perfect example of what I just said, and DeLay is one of those. And, you know, in the media, there's all kinds, on the blogs, there's all kinds of suggestions that it should it be before, should it be after. Well, it can't be before because then this interferes with the election too much. What is McCain going to do? What is Obama going to do? And so it has to come afterwards. But if it comes afterwards, then it really, and you have a presidential elect, it makes the whole issue with Iran, the Persian Gulf and Iraq, and at stake here, of course, ultimately is the vast oil resources in the Middle East, which is the major reason for the attack on Iraq in the first place. That is the dominant to the axis of the oil and gas reserves of the Persian Gulf and the Caspian Sea, which have 65% of the gas and oil things of the world. You're going to need those for the next 25 years, even if there's a move to non-fossil fuels. So if there is an attack on Iran, it has nothing to do with the missiles and enrichment and so forth. It's to secure the securitization through military force and all of the bases the United States has in this area, well over 50 major bases, to give the United States the political leverage to play a major role. I know this seems ironic to some Americans to say, well, my goodness, if we're doing all this, why is the price of oil so high? But that's due current kind of circumstances.
I have to jump in because we're at news time. We're talking with Robert Olson, a professor of Middle East history and politics at the University of Kentucky, about Iran. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Thursday, July the 10th. We're talking with Robert Olson, professor of Middle East history and politics at the University of Kentucky, getting his take on Iran launching more missile tests and warning the U.S. And Israel that it has the capability to strike back if it is struck. We're welcoming your thoughts, your questions about what the U.S. response to this should be, and Whether or not you're concerned that this means a military confrontation with Iran is just around the corner. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. To the phones we go again. Dave in Fitchburg. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Professor, first of all, I resent being labeled a neoconservative. I was against the war in Iraq. Iran is fundamentally different. I'm sure Dennis Ross of WNEP, one of the organizations you mentioned, would also resent being called a neoconservative. He is now a very active and aggressive member of the Barack Obama campaign, the candidate that I support. And also you...
Well, why do you think he's calling you a neocon, Dave?
He's calling me a neocon to try to delegitimize me because the neocons have been delegitimized in America.
Well,
and he's trying to define me so that
You think there should be a strike against Israel? That's the only time I heard our guest mention that some neoconservatives want a strike on Iran.
I think it might be past the point of no return as far as technology. Nuclear weapons are fundamentally different than other what's called WMDs. Nuclear weapons are really the only true WMDs really that exist. The only thing that can bring us down. I invite everyone, please, 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 go on YouTube and type atomic explosion. Watch some of these things. They're extremely, extremely dangerous. Iran is mining tons and tons and tons of uranium ore. They're converting their making this into yellow cake, and then they're converting it into, uranium. I'm not a physicist, uranium tetrachloride or tetrachloride. I mean, it's massive amounts, by far in excess of what they would need for their for any energy program. I support very, 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 very tough sanctions, though, including a blockade of Iran, since we are talking about potentially the destruction of the world of refined, and I want, there's one other part I want to emphasize this also, of refined petroleum products, because the billionaire Ayatollahs, who take all the money, have managed the Iranian economy in such a way that they have to actually import their refined petroleum products, including gasoline. If we just blockade that, we can maybe bring the regime down. And also, I don't like you bringing Israel also about this. Israel does not threaten Iran on three borders. It doesn't have terrorist groups surrounding it that are essentially Iranian, and I'm going to need a follow-up if you can test
well,
that.
Well, Dave, you've already given us a whole lot to talk about. We have many other callers. So, first of all, Dave says he resents you calling him a neocon. He thinks there should be stronger sanctions, and Iran is a big threat that needs to be contained.
Well, I didn't call I didn't call him a neoconservative.
Right.
There are many other people who are for a strike against Iran or a blockade or et cetera, who are not neoconservatives. But the neoconservatives, I think it's well documented in much academic literature and other literature that they also played a major role in advocating the strike on Iraq, and we see what that has brought us so far. Now, with regard to sanctions, we do have sanctions. So the Security Council put sanctions into play back in December. I think they have been effective. I think they do play a role, and as I suggested in my opening remarks, I think the July 4th announcement by the Iranian Foreign Minister, Munishir Muqtaki, that they were willing to enter into these negotiations with a 5+1 is indeed one of the results of the sanctions. But, of course, sanctions are very different from a blockade because a blockade is really an act of war, and then Iran would have to respond to that, nullifying all of the advantage that the Security Council sanctions had brought. And then, of course, we have an escalation rather than a discussion, which the July 4th announcement made. And this was a response to Javier Solana and what he had said. And another thing is, I think the most analysts in the field, and I'm one of them, the probability of Iran attacking anybody, even if they had a nuclear weapon, which would, most people feel would be 10 years or 15 years down
the line, even if it were a shorter span, the probability is zero. I mean, almost every analyst, not just Israeli analysts, but every analyst has said, well, if Iran even showed attention to that, then they would destroy Tehran. They'd kill all 14 million people there and probably in Tabriz and another 3 million. So the threat is to do away with at least 10 or 15 million Iranians. And what regime would want to take responsibility for bringing that upon its people? So I think that the probability of that occurring, in my judgment, is 1%.
Yeah. All right, Dave was upset that Israel was being brought into this, but the point is that Iran test fired 9 missiles yesterday, including ones capable of hitting Israel. Supposedly, Iran was saying that this was to show that it's ready to strike back if it was hit first. He says Israel hasn't threatened Iran, has it?
Well, if you take all the remarks made by a variety of Israelis and especially former politicians, the latest one was Shaul Mofaz, who used to be, I think, the defense minister, himself of Iranian origin, said that he was very much for the attack, and this is what started it. The other issue is, however, that even these Israelis who say that they want to attack Iran, just like they do in the United States, the other thing is how much power do they have? Many Israeli commentators say, well, Shaul Mofaz doesn't have any power. He's spouting off like other people do. So you really have to get down to the people who have power. For example, just a week ago, Mike Mullen, now here's a man who does have power since he's the chief of staff of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States, he also went to Iran. Of course, you can't believe the media, but it said that he went there saying that the United States would not support Iran if for some reason they decided to attack Iran. But of course, this is not the way it would be perceived in the Middle East and by Iran, because anything done by Israel, they know they would perceive being supported by the United States, because the closest alliance in the world is between Israel and the United States. So I think that there's hesitance, and we also know in the United States, my reading of it is, that in a vast number of retired generals, one's in play, Mike Mullen. He was just here at the University of Kentucky, by the way, a couple of months ago. I had a chance to briefly question him. He said he was prepared for diplomacy. Remember that, and that's kind of a bit of a change, because he replaced Fallon, who was the former head of the Central Command of Iraq, and many analysts think that he was relieved. I mean, this was the second top military position in the United States, right. And he was relieved, and now you have Mullen. And even when you look at Robert Gates, and even to a certain extent Condoleezza Rice, everything they've said lately is for the negotiations of one kind of modality and another that we were talking about earlier.
Okay,
these latest things assess the issue back, but I think by and large that's a response. Let me just say one other thing. The politics in the Middle East are very complicated. Why would Israel want to attack Iran now when Israel is negotiating with Syria through Turkey, and those negotiations, without United States participation, seem to be going quite well? Israel has even just lately, despite the ongoing conflict, had talks. They always do with Hamas, and Syria is supposed to be the biggest ally of Iran. In fact, let me just say one other thing. Many analysts in the field think now that when Israel attacked last September this installation in Syria, which was supposedly nuclear, that they were invited to do so by Iran, by Syria, because Syria did not want to have any kind of nuclear installation in its land, but Iran, because of its influence in Syria and in Lebanon, and with Hezbollah and Hamas, was pressuring them to do so. So look at how complicated it is.
I'm sorry to jump in, Professor Olson. We have a weather break right now, and I'm not going to be able to have time to give Dave a follow-up. We'll try to get to as many callers as possible after the weather break. And we'll try to keep our questions and answers as succinct as we can. Robert Olson, our guest, professor of Middle East History and Politics at the University of Kentucky, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 10th. Coming up after 8 o'clock, We will welcome in former U.S. Attorney David Iglesias, who will talk about the Justice Department scandal that he was right smack dab in the middle of. That's coming up in our next hour. Our guest, Robert Olson, is a professor of history, Middle East history, and politics at the University of Kentucky. He's giving us his analysis of what's going on with Iran test firing again long and medium range missiles overnight, and talking about the U.S. response so far to these missile tests and wondering what the future holds. Our next caller for him is Habu in Madison. Hi, Habu, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you. There's a correction that needs to be made, and I think it was made by you, respectfully the host, about Ahmadinejad referring to wipe out Israel off the map. That quote is taken out of context, and while I'm not an apologist,
I was mentioning John McCain has said this numerous times. What are we going to negotiate with this? So, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that was said in reference to history as opposed to physically wiping it off. But I'm no apologist for the mullahs there. Mm-hmm. In any case, two quick points. You know, Iran has the right to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes, and that's guaranteed by being a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Okay, and you agree with that, right, Professor Olson?
Yes, but let me just say, with regard to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the additional protocol, Iran has signed it, but it's never been ratified, just for a point, although I agree with his overall statement.
Yeah. And your other point, Habu?
Yes. This has not been mentioned, but just about 10 days ago or less, Israel carried out a major long-range air exercise involving 100 aircraft and air refuelers, etc., traveling approximately 900 miles. And it was widely seen as a rehearsal for a potential strike on Iran's nuclear facilities.
Is that what that was, Professor Olson?
Well, it could have been. In my view, Israel's exercise was again part of these negotiating maneuvering, which is going on. Of course, it could be that, but why would they advertise it so much in the ahead of time? If they're going to strike Iran, they would do so. No one can rule out that possibility. But as I've said, generally, I think this. It's not likely, and this is part of these hardball negotiations that were going on to get Iran to concede more than they would like to concede in these negotiations with the Europeans.
Yeah. Thanks, Habu. Janice in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Joy. Thank you, and your guest. Mm. Yes, I feel like this is a big, you know, complete media hype again. They continue this thing. Why we can't focus on peace, negotiations, diplomacy? That's what we should be focusing on, not this, oh, they're going to strike, get ready, and then Israelis, same thing, they're all paranoid, you know, and they keep escalating this thing to, like, if you wish for it, you're going to get it. It's like, let's wish for peace, diplomacy, and let's work for it, not, you know, threatening these people, and just, we are hated around the world, and I can just see why, you know, why we don't have some humility and not a bunch of egomaniacs that the U.S. Mm-hmm. is. Thank you.
Professor Olson.
Well, I think, again, it's always very important to remember in these circumstances that if there were to be a strike on Iran and Iran retaliation, it has very little to do with the thing with the missiles or with the nuclear enrichment. It has to do with the consolidation of the United States and with the support of Europe to secure the access militarily of the gas and oil resources in the Middle East. It could end up to be about $25 or $30 trillion, and then as they move towards the production over the next 20-25 years to non-fossil fuels.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money,
and
that's a lot of resources.
Daniel in Rice Lake is next. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. John Bolton, Bush's former ambassador to the UN, said Israel will launch an air attack against Iran immediately after the November election if Obama wins. If McCain wins, they will postpone their attack. Israel's attack will occur before Bush leaves office. Is John Bolton's prediction credible?
No, I don't. Well, I mean, not his prediction. It could occur, but everything that has developed lately, and what I've been discussing here, is that many people seem to be opposed to that, including the United States military, including Robert Gates, and indirectly even Condoleezza Rice. So no, and especially with this offer of these negotiations by Iran. So I think that's the context in which we're dealing. Yeah. Plus, John Bolton is not now an official of the United States government.
Yeah. In fact, Defense Secretary Robert Gates says Iran's missile tests underscore U.S. concerns about a military threat, but Gates says he doesn't think the launches put the U.S. and Israel any closer to a military confrontation with Iran. He says everyone recognizes the danger involved in going that route. Gates says Washington's policy toward Iran remains focused on diplomatic and economic pressure. And you think that's true, Professor Olson?
Well, I do. And one thing, I don't want to change the conversation over to the Middle Eastern, to the Arab-Israeli conflict, but it seems one thing that would help out that if Israel did not proceed with its expansion and colonization of the West Bank to monopolize the water resources and the best agricultural land in the West Bank, that would remove some of the propaganda that the Iranian regime, especially Ahmadinejad, has used to secure support among the Arab peoples in the Middle East, and which he has done. And the Iranians have used Ahmadinejad for this purpose. You'll notice that lately Ahmadinejad has not had much to say about the missile strikes, about the July 4th offer of Iran to negotiate. That means that he's being sidelined by what many people consider the major power in Iran, the supreme ruler, Ali Khamenei. So this is another very positive sign. Ahmadinejad is not so useful now with all of his anti-Israel, anti-Holocaust rhetoric. It's been reduced, and to me that's a good sign.
Yeah. Let's listen to Barack Obama also talking about these missile tests and Iraq's connection to all of this.
Our occupation in Iraq is part of what has strengthened Iran's hand, and it's very important for us to stabilize the situation in Iran, in Iraq, in order for us to be able to be more effective dealing with the Iranian threat.
And you had mentioned that a little bit earlier, Professor Olson.
Well, another thing is to remember that Iran is very much supportive of the Islamic Supreme Council in Iraq, which is the major party in the government of Iraq. It's the major party that supports the Maliki government, other than the Kurds. Okay, so the United States and Iran are both supporting the major party in Iraq, which is advocating, of course, stabilization in Iraq, and even willing to sign the status forces agreement with the United States. So this would be very much jeopardized if Iran were to be attacked. It would contribute to the destabilization of Iraq, the very thing that Barack Obama is saying that we should strive for.
Yeah, it's not directly related to Iran's missile test, but I wanted to ask you, too, about the reports this week that the Iraqi government is now saying it wants the U.S. to set a timetable for troop withdrawal. What are we to make of that?
Well, what we have to make of it is that Nouri al-Maliki, the Prime Minister of Iraq, also is a politician. He has all of these very fractious elements within Iraq to deal with, and he's trying to elicit their support, and especially from the Sunnis, because the United States has changed its position now to try to reconcile these very differences past year and a half. He's trying to do this as well. So, I mean, after all, he has a domestic constituency, a very fractious one, at the same time is being occupied by foreign power. So it's not strange that he would say that he wants a timetable for the reactions. The other thing is that does not mean the United States is going to pull out of Iraq, because it will still leave 50, 60,000 troops there. Another thing, we have 40,000 mercenaries in Iraq, all ex-soldiers. The United States could increase the mercenaries to 60,000 or 70,000, even if there are no troops there. So in effect, there would still be 50 to 75,000 troops there.
Yeah. Well, in our final moments here, Professor Olson, you want to leave us with, I don't know, some hope? Where do you see this? How do you see this shaking out?
Well, I think there should be a response to the July 4th offer by the Iran to enter these negotiations. I think in Europe wants that, and I think that should move forward. We'll get through this election in the United States, and we can't forget there's an election coming up in Iraq, in Iran also on March 6th. Marginalize Ahmadinejad. Iran wants to stabilize whatever, consolidate whatever gains has been in Iraq, and I think the United States can deal with that effectively.
Yeah, you see a very you do not see a military confrontation on the horizon.
I don't, but I don't rule it out. However, but most things seem to point not in that direction. The only thing that could lead to attack on Iran by Israel or by the United States or both would be in a thinking about the American economic class that because of all of the problems that the United States is confronting in the economy, that they need to secure the securitization of that oil and gas in the Persian Gulf, in the Middle East, in the Caspian Sea, and in Central Asia to secure the dominance of the United States over the next 20 years as a superpower and as it moves into a non-fossils age over the next 25 or 30 years. But it's a 25-30-year kind of process. And if they want to secure the capital to do that with their international partners, then it's possible that we could have a strike, yes.
We appreciate your expertise and your analysis.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Robert Olson, Professor of Middle East History and Politics at the University of Kentucky. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Christina, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Karen Prager for producing this hour. And thanks to Good Morning America, where we obtain the sound bites of Barack Obama. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.